Today we'll pick up where we left off. So we were discussing the Schwinger model, massless 2D QED, and what we found at the end of Monday's class is that if we change the background gauge field, the one component that we were allowing to be non-zero, by 2 pi over L, that led to a change in the chiral charge of minus 2, created a particle and an antiparticle, but they had opposite chiralities. So the electric charge was conserved, the chiral charge was not conserved. And this information is enough to allow us to essentially guess what the form of the anomalous non-conservation equation has to be. So the chiral current, j mu 5, is conserved classically, but we just saw the quantum effects led to the non-conservation of this current. And we can use this result to guess what the anomaly is, or in other words, what goes on the right-hand side of this equation. And then we can, later part of the lecture, we'll derive a version of this more carefully using functional integrals. Okay, so the first thing we can do is use our result, divide our result by delta t. So we want to find the rate of change of this charge. And we change the background gauge field by 2 pi over L, the charge changes by minus 2. We changed it by 4 pi over L. The same arguments would lead to a change in the chiral charge of minus 4. So these two quantities are proportional, and this result allows us to determine the proportion, constant of proportionality. So the delta Q is minus L over pi times delta A1. Again, we can divide by delta T. So that gives us that Q dot 5 is taking the limit, delta T goes to 0 minus L over pi A1 dot. Now, we want to rewrite this in terms of current. And the natural way to do that is to note that the charge is the integral of the current. So 2 pi is the integral dx of J05. And the right-hand side of this equation, we can also write in terms of an integral. This L suggests that we're integrating over space. Remember that our background gauge field is a spatial constant in the gauge we're working in. So we can write this L times A1 as an integral dx of A1. And we also used the fact that we were working in the case where A0 was 0. So we can write this in another way that suggests how to incorporate the other component of this current. So A1 is equal to epsilon 0 mu times A mu dx. This is true in general. Epsilon 0, 0, 0 is a useful way we can rewrite A1. And so the combining these two results gives us an equation for the time derivative of J0. So we get that the 0 J05, 1 over pi epsilon 0 nu f 0 nu. And this naturally looks like one component of an equation like this. We just replace these zeros, mu's, we get the anomalous non-conservation equation. So this is clearly not a derivation. That was just some of these steps were inspired guesses. This turns out to be the right answer. The other term of the equation is zero when we work in the approximation that a zero zero, or the assumption that a zero zero. This is our final result. This is the anomalous non-conservation equation in two dimensions. The divergence of the current is non-zero. It depends on the background gauge field. And again, we should interpret this really as the expectation value of the divergence of the current. The quantum version of the conservation equations are the Ward identities, which the simplest Ward identity just tells us about the vacuum expectation value of the current. So that Ward of.
Minus L by pi,
yes, so minus L by pi and epsilon, yes, minus on zero, we say epsilon 0 1 is one, then minus. Okay. Charlie.
It kind of feels like what's happening here is almost like some sort of spontaneous symmetry breaking or something, because A is kind of picking a direction and that's inducing a preference for like left versus right. Do you have any comments on connection there, or is that not a good way to think about it?
I think it's not quite the same thing as
kind of picking out a A is not respecting the symmetry of the theory, so your background field or whatever, so your vacuum.
In a sense, they're somewhat similar. I think the physics is certainly different between anomalies and spontaneous symmetry breaking, but you're right there that the classical, in both cases, the classical theory has some symmetries that are not respected when you quantize it. They might expect. The reasons are different in the two cases, and some, at least the details. In some sense, the a mu is breaking the symmetry between.
Do we understand this as the symmetry no longer exists, or it no longer leads to a causal current?
The symmetry, well, it does give us this anomalous non-conservation equation. So if it's truly a symmetry, this side would be zero. But in a sense, it's there. The fact that the symmetry was there classically does lead to these anomalous non-conservation equations. So there's some constraints on the correlation functions and the divergence of the current. The fact that there is an anomaly does place strong constraints on the physics, and in some cases uniquely determines observations of experiments. Okay, before we move on to functional integrals, I'd just like to say a word about regularization. I haven't mentioned that much in our discussion, but as I mentioned, introduction to the first lecture. anomalies, in a sense, tie together UV physics and IR physics. We've been talking about observations we can do at low energies. We do a small change in the background gauge field that leads to an observable change in the chiral charge. So I haven't mentioned UV physics really at all in that statement, but it is hiding in the background, and it's really an essential ingredient in making the statements I've made so far more precise, that I was implicitly assuming something about the UV regulators. So let's draw quickly the picture of the spectrum and Dirac-C we had yesterday. So the ground state and had these energy levels filled, these energy levels empty, the same in the right moving sector. And when we changed the background gauge field, that shifted the energy levels by one. I said that led to a change in the chiral charge. To make that statement more precise, I need to introduce a regulator. If I don't introduce a regulator, well, the total chiral charge before and after is a divergent quantity minus a divergent quantity. We have infinitely many occupied energy levels both before and after. So to make that statement more precise, I need to regulate those infinities, then make the comparison of how the chiral charge changes, and then I can remove the regulator. Implicitly, what I was doing in the discussion last time, I was imposing, in a sense, the simplest regulator you can imagine, just cutting off the spectrum at lambda and minus lambda. If that's the case, this is the regulator I use. Anytime, if we shift the energy levels, anytime a energy level crosses zero, another energy level crosses at minus infinity or plus infinity. And the same over here. So I could imagine choosing a different regulator. It's certainly not as natural as this one. But I could choose a regulator that's dependent on the background gauge field or treats the left and right sectors differently, in which case the crossing of zero might be connected to the crossing of the cutoff in some different way. And if I did that, I could come up with a way to regulate this theory in which this is not true. I could change this at the cost of changing the conservation of electric charge. If I play around with these cutoffs, I could come up with a regulator that conserved one or the other, these charges, or neither. But it's impossible. What we claim is that it's impossible to come up with a regulator that conserves both of these charges simultaneously. And the natural choice in regulator leads to conservation of the electric charge, which is far more important. The conservation of electric charge is tied to gauge invariance, which is a crucial ingredient for making sense of the quantum theory. Loss of gauge invariance would lead to problems with unitarity or renormalizability, or otherwise cause problems for the theory. So the natural regulator here is the one that preserves electric charge and gauge invariance, and it's the one we should should choose. That will play an important role in more careful treatment. See that in some sense, when we treat anomalies using functional integrals or using other methods, the choice of regulator may seem arbitrary, will play a crucial role in which of the symmetries are preserved in the quantum theory. And we always want to make the choice that the global symmetries, which are subgroups of gauge symmetries, are preserved. Charlie.
I'm a little confused because when you're cutting it off, what happens to the modes that are like right on the boundary? And then when you would move, like, you know, you would move it down because every term is hopping. What happens when it hops past minus infinity or infinity or something?
So if it hops past, we have a new mode that crosses, say, in this direction. We've created a new right-moving particle. So if we wanted to count one way we could count the total electric charge would be to count the number of occupied states in the left plus the right minus some constant. And for to count the chiral charge, we count the number of occupied states in the left minus the right minus some constant. And every time we have a new occupied state appear from across the regulator, we'll also have a occupied state cross zero. So in that sense, the IR for the region of this plot near zero is connected to the UV. Or the regions near the regular
translation, so it affects everything at once.
Exactly. Okay, so given that qualitative picture of anomalies, I'd like to move on to a more careful treatment. So again, I'm going to consider massless QED. This time, I'm going to work in Euclidean space. Signature space-time didn't play a large role before, but working in Euclidean space will simplify our discussion. And I'm also going to work in p equals 4. It's not crucial. In tutorial, you'll fill in some of the gaps in this derivation I do in d equals 2. And in d equals 2, it's simpler, so that's better for tutorial.
Sorry, I'm just curious, is that the same formula in every dimension, or just 2?
This is specific to 2 dimensions. The Levi-Civita symbol in 4 dimensions naturally has 4 indices. So we'll have a version of this with 4-dimensional Levi-Civita and 2 Fs. Also, the constant in front can change. The rest is.
Oh, I see.
Okay, so the d equals 4 is not essential. None of these assumptions are really essential. The d equals 4 works essentially the same way in d equals 2. The fact that we're dealing with abelian gauge theory is not also not essential. It generalizes very very mild generalization if we deal with non-abelian gauge theory instead. Perhaps the most important of these assumptions is the fact that we're working in Euclidean space. In Euclidean space, the Dirac operator, ID slash, is Hermitian. And this is a large simplification of the derivation. It can be done in Lorentzian space, but the arguments are much, much simpler in Euclidean space. Okay, and the basic object we're going to study is functional integral with a quantum spinner field and a background gauge field. So there's no A integral here. As before, you can see the effect if you treat the gauge field classically. It persists if we treat it quantum mechanically, but it's an unnecessary complication. Okay. So if we do. So again, we're trying to derive the Ward identity. And the way we're going to do that is using local chiral transformation. So under a local chiral transformation, the spinner fields transform. The gauge field is invariant. The action changes like it did before. So S goes to S plus integral of theta of x. This is what I called alpha yesterday. Changed it in my notes. If anyone strongly objects, I can go back to alpha. And if we do a local chiral transformation, that is essentially just a change of variables in our functional integral. Instead of integrating over psi, we're doing some change of variables. So we're integrating over psi e to the I theta gamma 5. So we change variables. Our functional integral does not change. So this is invariant under this local chiral transformation.
Okay.
Yes.
The gauge field doesn't transform.
It does not transform. The gauge field is invariant. So our fermion fields transform like e to the I theta gamma 5. And gauge field is invariant. So this remember the chiral symmetry, the symmetry of just the massless theory of a free fermion. So and if we add. We couple it to a gauge field. The way to make it stay a symmetry is to have the gauge field transform in the same way as the covariant derivative, the partial derivative, which doesn't transform. So if we choose this transformation law, then the chiral symmetry remains symmetry of QED. Charlie?
The measure stays the same because for the same reason any bilinear would stay the same kind of?
The measure does not stay the same.
Functional integral
states. We can, if we change variables, in an integral, the value of the integral doesn't change, but the measure might. And so that means that the derivative. Yes, ma'am.
The whole functional integral does not change just because we are integrating over all possible configurations, right?
That's right.
Then changing the variable does not change the whole integral because all of them are being integrated over anyway.
Exactly. If we take the derivative of the of z with respect to theta, that's zero. In particular, it's zero when theta is equal to zero. And this is equal to the derivative of theta of x, the integral d theta prime, theta bar prime, e to the minus s minus integral d4 x theta d mu j mu 5. I'll leave it at theta equals 0. And if the measure were invariant, the measure were invariant, doing this derivative and then setting theta equal to 0 would give us that the vacuum expectation value, the divergence of the current, was 0. But this measure is not invariant, and so that's going to give us an additional term. This is not invariant, even though the entire integral is. And we need to determine how this measure transforms and evaluate that additional contribution to this equation. That will give us the anomalous non-conservation equation, the corrected version of the four dead endies. So our expectation is that the measure transforms to the measure times e to the 2i theta gamma 5, something like this, because both psi and psi bar transform to get a factor of e to the I theta gamma 5 when we do a transformation. We expect something like this. Can't be quite right because this is a function and this is a matrix, but turns out that our answer will be just a trace of this here, where this is both a matrix and a functional trace. So this is what we expect the answer to be. And let me just be a little more careful and derive this in a way that will both fill in some of the gaps, perhaps, in this expectation, and also allow us to introduce a regulator that will allow us to actually compute this contribution to the anomalous non-conservation equation. So to do this a bit more carefully, and also to allow us to introduce a regulator, let's define the measure.
Sorry, Dan. Sorry, quick question. I thought the trace of gamma 5 was 0, and that's the only matrix, right?
Yes.
So I'm a little confused as to why.
Yes, the trace of gamma, the matrix trace of gamma 5 is 0. The functional trace is going to be infinite. We're going to have an ambiguous result, or we introduce a regulator.
I see. So the trace over theta is like, okay.
It'll.
What you were about to say, but what do you mean by what is the functional trace?
The functional trace This means we are essentially
just integrating over
the integrating over over dx.
So just we could basically that.
Basically that, yeah.
Okay.
But we can when we do it explicitly, we'll have to insert a complete set of eigenfunctions to actually compute that the regulator.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, so that's our expectation. Let's define the measure to do this a bit more carefully. And allow us to introduce regulator. So we are going to work in eigenbasis of the Dirac operator, ID slash. So in Euclidean space, this is a Hermitian operator because the gamma matrices are all Hermitian and anti-Hermitian in Euclidean space. Or it depends on your overall signature, but yeah, they all have the same Hermitian properties, unlike in Minkowski space, where gamma zero behaves differently. So here, so phi n are the eigenfunctions of this operator, and because ID slash is a Hermitian operator in Euclidean space, it has real eigenfunctions. Real eigenvalues. And we'll assume that these eigenfunctions are orthonormal. So we'll make a choice of normalization so that these are orthonormal. Which means that the integral of phi dagger n m phi n is delta n m, and they're automatically complete, which means that the sum over all the eigenfunctions phi n alpha, this is a Dirac index, phi n beta, we get delta in position, Dirac delta in position, and a Kronecker delta, the Dirac index. And if we introduce this eigenbasis, we can write, decompose the field in this eigenbasis. So we can write it as sum of some Grassmann variables times these eigenfunctions, and similarly for psi bar. Then our measure is just the means we need to integrate over the a n's and the b bar n's. B psi bar is product for me and b bar n. We transform the measure that will transform our fields. And we can write the new coefficients. As the projection of our transformed field onto our eigenfunctions. And this just phi n e to the I theta gamma 5 psi. And we can expand. We know the expansion of psi in terms of this eigenbasis. So that gives us just some am I n e to the I theta gamma 5. And this is some matrix. This should be an M. You can call C n M. And so the product of the product over DANs becomes the inverse determinant of this matrix. Which we can write as the exponential of minus trace of the log C or e to the I trace theta gamma 5. That is our original. So this is exactly the factor we'd expect. So here, this trace explicitly means summing over we're integrating over the eigenfunctions and as well as doing a matrix trace over the components. So explicitly writing out the trace of theta gamma 5 is integral of phi dagger m alpha gamma 5 alpha beta phi and beta. These are functions of x. That's what we mean by the trace. And introducing this eigenfunction allows us to actually compute it.
Can we get we got the Jacobian, and from Jacob means the determinant you're writing as exponential trace of log.
Yes.
Are you missing a theta?
Yes, I am. Thank you. Okay. So this is our anomaly, or the integral of our anomaly, and we need to compute it to determine what extra term we get in this equation. What we get here is that this is derivative theta of x, our original measure, e to the minus s minus theta dot k mu 5 minus 2i trace. Theta of 5. So once we take the derivative, we'll get that j, the expectation value of the divergence of j is trace of gamma pi.
The trace expression somehow, why is it still depending on alpha, beta, m, n?
I think n and m should be equal, right?
N and m should be equal, yes.
And alpha, beta should
be... Those are summed over. Summing over repeated indices. So we need to evaluate this term in order to find the anomaly. And as Charlie pointed out early, there this gives us an ambiguous result. We compute this. We can use the completeness relations to write the sum over our eigenfunctions as a delta. Also get a delta in the Dirac space. So we'll get integral d4x delta of x minus x. So we'll have the theta of x floating around. And then we've got the trace, just the matrix trace now of gamma 5. So this is 0 times infinity. So it's ambiguous. And we need to regulate this in order to compute the anomaly. Okay, so one way we can introduce a regulator is to remove the contributions of the eigenfunctions with large eigenvalue. So we can do that by inserting a regulator, say f of k squared, which is 1 at 0 and goes to 0 at infinity sufficiently quickly. So all its derivatives at infinity will be 0. This could be like a Gaussian or something like that. Precise form won't matter. So if we throw this regulator into our expression for the trace, we get limit, we remove our regulator, integral d4x, sum n theta y dagger n, gamma 5, and we'll insert some regulator here, which removes the eigenfunctions with large eigenvalues. And so a key point here is that these eigenfunctions, eigenvalues, are gauge invariant because we're working on a basis of the Dirac operator I d slash, where d is the covariant derivative. So a regulated theory preserves gauge invariance. So we're preserving gauge invariance at all steps in this derivation, which means that there's no way that our regulator can break the vector symmetry, or electric charge will be conserved. So, we could choose a different regulator here, work in a different eigenbasis, but if we chose a regulator that did not explicitly preserve gauge invariance, there'd be no guarantee that we would end up with a gauge invariant theory that conserved electric charge at the end. Okay. So at this point, there's lots of algebra, which I go through in the lecture notes. I want to go through on the board. The conceptual points really are fixed at this point. What we can do is manipulate this expression using the fact that these are eigenfunctions. And that they our eigenfunctions are orthonormal and complete, and use some identities involving the field strength tensors. And at the end of the day, we'll end up with an expression where the trace of theta gamma 5 is the integral d4 x theta times something, which is the anomaly. And this will be finite. We can take this limit, and we'll get a finite answer. So, yeah. Lots of algebra using completeness and orthonormality of the eigenfunctions. End up with a result that gives us the missing term we need in this equation here to derive the anomalous non-conservation equation. One, we'll get the vacuum expectation value of the divergence J5 is this term. So we end up with is the expression. And so it looks very similar to what we had in two dimensions. Coefficient changes. Construct an invariance using the Levy-Civita symbol in four dimensions, we need two field strength tensors. But otherwise, it's almost the same result we had before.
If the term that you wrote, is it exactly the anomaly that appears there? Because at the beginning, I thought anomaly from that calculation should be something like a number, I don't know, 12, for instance. Because we integrate, we literally have gamma and a function of theta, we trace, we don't have anything physical there, right? It's just integral. So it should be a number or something like that, if we regularize. But how FF is going to appear?
So F appears because when we introduce a regulator, we have, if we want to explicitly preserve gauge invariance, we should work in an eigenbasis of the Dirac operator. So if we insert a regulator which depends on these functions, we can use this eigenvalue equation to write this, write f minus lambda n squared over lambda squared and phi n is f of minus I slash squared lambda squared acting on phi n. And this d slash involves the gauge field. And so in two dimensions, we just get one field strength tensor. In four dimensions, we get two field strength tensors. And that has to do with some identities involving the Dirac matrices. So we also have a gamma 5 here. In four dimensions, we have that the trace of gamma 5 is the trace of gamma 5, gamma mu, gamma nu is equal to 0. So we need to expand this to second order to get anything non-zero. In two dimensions, this term would be non-zero. So we'll get a non-zero term with only one gauge field.
Another thing that we have a question about is this choosing of basis is arbitrary, right? And choose another basis and do all that this calculation, right? For instance, I can choose, I don't know, the Kellen-Gordon basis, right?
Yes.
It seems it's very dependent on basis that we choose.
It is. So we have to put in an additional physical constraint, is that we want electric charge to be conserved. That puts a restriction on which regulators we're allowed to choose. To be consistent, once we choose a regulator, we should compute all quantities of interest with the same regulator in the physics. So that's one choice we should make. And if we choose a different regulator, it's not necessarily true that electric charge is conserved. Just like in this picture over here, so we choose a regulator that was independent of the gauge field. I could choose a different regulator that, say, on the left sector, it shifted down as we increased the gauge field. And well, the physics, this story would change. We'd no longer have the delta phi. Delta Q5 is minus 2. Ended up to be, say, minus 1, and delta Q is also minus 1. These results are regulator dependent. But if we demand that delta Q equals 0, that puts strong constraints on what regulators we're allowed to use. And with that extra restriction on our regulated theory, then this is uniquely determined.
So then one calculational question I got stuck, that log C, how did we get, because CNM is, C is the matrix EI.
C, yeah.
Okay, I see. Maybe I understand.
Okay.
Modulo a minus sign, but I think it's clear. Okay.
Right.
Is there no counter term or anything like that we can do to cancel this out? Because it looks like F wedge F, which is like the topological terms that we've sometimes seen before. And I'm just wondering what.
It is a topological term. I'll have more to say about that tomorrow.
But then can we not just introduce a counter term and cancel it out without breaking gauge invariance and therefore?
In general, no, we can't do that. Yes. So
the counter term is a procedure of putting regulators.
Yeah, yes. So as Chang said, there's strong constraints that are put on the regulators we're allowed to use, and adding an extra regulator to cancel this term in general would break gauge invariance. So
I mean, if I added an extra term to my Lagrangian, I could cancel that out, right? In general?
Not in general. In some cases, depending on the matter content, you can play around with this and move it to a different place in the Lagrangian. There's some physical parameter that's associated with this term.
Yes. We also have expectation value on the right-hand side.
If we treated everything quantum mechanically, we integrated over A, yes, there would be an expectation value on the right-hand side. I've throughout this derivation, I've been treating A as a classical background field. That's why there is no A integral in the expression on the top board, the Z of A.
Is it possible to insert operators into this equation to make it some kind of word identity?
Yes, absolutely. So we look at so even this, if we just take one derivative, that gives us one word identity or anomalous non-conservation equation, starting from this functional integral. But we could also start with a functional integral with extra operators inserted here. And those would give us extra operators here that would carry along for the ride and give us additional word identities or anomalous non-conservation equations. There's in general an infinite set of these equations. This is just the simplest one.
If I did want to treat A quantum mechanically, could I just treat this CA as like, can I just basically path integrate over this CA and then that will just turn into an expectation value on the right hand side? Is that how you think about it?
Yes. Yeah.
And in the whole procedure, the place where we chose our symmetry that we wanted to be the gauge symmetry to be conserved and not the chiral symmetry is only the way we introduced the regulator.
Exactly. This is the only place. We could, yeah, so the fact that we introduced a regulator that depended on these eigenfunctions, eigenvalues, and the eigenvalues were the eigenvalues of the Dirac operator. We could repeat this derivation instead of working in a basis of the ID slash, we could work in a basis of ID slash, and we'd find there's no anomaly if we did the same calculation in this basis. But then electric charge would not be concerned. Okay. So next time I'll say a few words about the right hand side here. This is topological as it's pointed out. And I'll also talk a bit about gauge anomalies. So far we've just been discussing anomalies in global symmetries, which are features of quantum theories. There's lots of interesting physics, and in general, a global anomaly is a good thing. Gauge anomalies, on another thing, are terrible. One can spoil the consistency of the theory. So we can learn something about what theories are allowed and consistent by discussing them, but a theory with a gauge anomaly is in a sense sick. It doesn't lead to physics. That's where we're going tomorrow.